I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about Indiana's contemporary literary landscape. This Saturday is the annual Holiday Author Fair at the Indiana Historical Society, where more than 70 authors will gather to show and discuss their work. We'll talk about the fair and the state of writing and publishing in Indiana. My guests are author and former Indianapolis Star columnist Dan Carpenter, young adult fiction writer Shane Phipps, and Becky Bollinger of the Indiana Historical Society. If you want to chat books and join the conversation, please call 866-476-3881. Email is nolimits@wfyi.org. Facebook is nolimitswfyi. Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking today about the Indiana Historical Society's Holiday Author Fair. It's an annual event that brings together many of the state's writers, published authors. We're going to talk both about the fair and sort of about the literary landscape in Indiana. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are from the Indiana Historical Society, Becky Bollinger, and two writers, Dan Carpenter and Shane Phipps. Shane is a young adult fiction writer, and Dan is a man of many hats, and I probably ought to do this disclosure here, a couple of disclosures. One, Dan and I worked together for years at the Indianapolis News and Indianapolis Star. He also has written for the Statehouse File, which I publish, serve as the publisher for. And the other disclosure is that I have been one of the authors at the Authors Fair in the past. So I just want to put that out there so that none of our listeners will think we're holding anything back. Well, Becky, talk with me a little bit about what the Author Fair is and how people could attend if they wish to do so.
Well, this Saturday from 12 to 4 is our 13th annual Indiana Holiday Author Fair, and we invite authors from all over the country, really, to participate. Generally, our guidelines are they need to be living in Indiana, have written about Indiana, and educated in Indiana. There's an application process.
Know how to spell Indiana.
yes. And so we start the whole process in May, and by October we have chosen the authors. They're so excited. The event goes from 12 to 4 on Saturday at the Indiana History Center downtown, 450 West Ohio Street. And it is a free day for the building, so we have it jam-packed because we have Author Fair, we have our Festival of Trees, where we have 50 professionally decorated trees all over the building. We have children's programs and crafts. Santa will be there from 2 to 4, and it is free parking. So you have all of your favorite new books are just waiting for you to come down and discover them.
How do you select? You say you pick the authors. Are there more? It sounds like it's not an automatic process where you say, I've written a book, I sort of know where Indiana is on the map and would like to come.
No, it's actually quite a process. We have a mailing list now of about 800 authors that we send information to in May. There is an application that is included with that. And over the summer, we check to make sure there's some criterias with an event like this, because all of the book sales run through the Indiana History Center. So we are nonprofit, but at the same time, we really can't afford to lose money on the books. So the books have to be returnable after the event, and there has to be a standard wholesale discount, which is generally about 40% for the book. So and we need to make sure the book will be in print by then, because we get a lot of people that apply for a book that's coming in November. And as we all know, in the publishing world, there's a lot of gray when it comes to your actual drop date for a new book. So we have a committee that will then pick the books. We try to balance it out. We have some great self-published authors this year. We have to make sure that we don't have 70 fiction writers and no history writers, or 70 history writers and no fiction writers. So we have a balance of different topics and genres.
Dan and Shane, I'm going to want you both to talk about specifically the works that you're going to be bringing to the fair. But before we get to that, could you talk a little bit about what it means to be part of the Holiday Author Fair? It sounds like there is a process of selection, so you have to make a cut just to get to that point. What does that say to you as a writer, as an artist? Dan, I'll start with you.
Well, it's awfully flattering to me to be in the presence of so many outstanding writers, including people I've been, you know, one of the groupies of, to be around James Alexander Thom and Phil Gully, three poets laureate are involved in this, and I just feel like I'm invited to some pretty fast company.
Shane.
Being a first-time author, it's overwhelming to me. I don't fully understand what I'm getting into yet. I'll be able to answer your question Saturday about 4:30, but it's
probably with a glass of wine in hand at that point.
As Dan said, Jim Thom for me is a huge inspiration. There wouldn't be my book if it weren't for some of his that had such an impact on me as a teacher and a historian and a writer. So I told him they might need to give me a seat belt to keep me in my seat and keep me from being a fanboy in some of these instances. So it's going to be something to experience. I'm just looking forward to it.
So. And I should say, we're talking about the Holiday Author Fair here on No Limits today. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. So, Shane, you say your book was inspired to some degree by the work of James Alexander Thom. Meaning, and he's made the bulk of his reputation in literary and very well-crafted historical fiction. Tell me a little bit about what your book is about and how it draws from that genre.
My book is about an Indianapolis eighth grade boy who comes to a deeper understanding of history through journals that his grandfather gives him. These old journals that it's a tradition in his family that teenagers keep a journal. And when they come of age, they read the journals of their ancestors. What he doesn't know until he starts reading is that he's transported through whatever time warp and enters their body and experiences the history firsthand through them. So each journal he enters, he goes and experiences it firsthand.
Is it planned to be a series then, or is it? It sounds like it could work as a concept that carries over.
To be honest, this book was written based on the standards that I teach, which is the first half of U.S. history up through the Civil War, eighth grade Indiana history standards. I've been asked that question a lot, and it's been well received. And the answer is maybe so now, but I'll have to do a whole lot more research to get into the 20th century because I haven't studied that history for a long time. But yeah. I would love to do another one.
And where do you teach?
Decatur Township, Decatur Middle School, in the southwest corner of Marin County.
Okay, well, you're allowed to give a shout-out to your students.
Yep, hello there.
If you want to.
Yeah.
And, Dan, you've got a new book of poems, right?
A new book of poems called The Art He'd Sell for Love, which is a collection of free verse. And then I'll also have, from the Historical Society Press, I'll also have Indiana Out Loud, which is a collection of my political, my articles, mostly political columns. So people might conclude I'm offering neither rhyme nor reason. You knew I was waiting for that.
But I guess if I'd been nicer, I'd have walked you up
to
it.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. The poetry book is the newer one, and it's the second poetry book I've done. Trying to make a little gear shift from journalism.
Is that tough? I mean, we've both been newspaper columnists, and you get into particularly that routine because you have to write so regularly of thinking of the world in sort of 700 word bursts, and all of that. stretching yourself with poetry, it's an entirely different form. Was it difficult to make that transition?
It can be, but there are some principles that carry over, as you remember, as you still practice, especially with the human interest feature, mm-hmm. the compression and the reliance upon really concrete, vivid imagery, trying to be earthy to get across more abstract ideas. I think there's a flow between that branch of journalism that you and I have dealt with and poetry. So, and I've been a reader of poetry for a long time and enjoyed it and actually really got going on it as an endeavor, reading political poems from Denise Levertov and the like back when I was doing polemics in the newspaper.
Yeah.
So I also saw, some continuity there.
So you could make the transition. Well, and sound and cadence are important in writing a good mm-hmm. column as well. Becky, obviously you got a couple of heavyweights in the studio here with us. Who are some of the other authors that people would be able to meet if they come on Saturday?
Well, we're very excited because Phil Gulley will be there, and he is always a very popular favorite. Norbert Kraft will be there. Travis DiNicola will be there. Ken Turchi with his wonderful L.S. Ayers book will be there. Mickey Maurer, the president of IBJ, has a new book of crossword puzzles. So it's great to have authors that cross different genres, and we do carry all their backlist as well. So we will have Mickey's backlist titles. We will have all of Phil Gulley's, both his religious writing. My favorite probably is If the Church Were Christian. That mm-hmm. is one of my favorite books from him, as well as his On the Porch series books. Rabbi Sandy Sasso will be there with a wonderful new book of Jewish stories of love and marriage. So it's a full house. We have 77 when it comes to authors and then their co-authors there.
And you were showing me James Alexander Tom's new book as well.
It's called Fire in the Water, and it is very close to my heart because it is the story of the Sultana, which was a steamship full of survivors from Andersonville and the Civil War camps. And the ship exploded on the Mississippi, going to the Ohio, and had the largest maritime loss of death. The problem was it happened the day after Abraham Lincoln was assassinated.
So nobody
knew about it. And my mother grew up on the Ohio River, so it was part of the folklore of living on the river.
And presumably he's going to be there as well?
He will be there with his lovely wife, Dark Rain. Yes. So.
Both of whom have been guests on the show.
In
the past. And I should say part of this, it's not just that they'll be there selling the books and you can look at them. You have a chance to go up there and talk with them and get the books signed and all of that, right?
Yeah. It's a four-hour event. It's 12 to 4. And we have people say, well, why is it so long? It's because when you go to a standard book signing, you go, you get your name signed in the book, you say, hi, how are you, and you move on. But mm-hmm. with a longer event like this, you can really engage the authors. You can talk to them. We prefer you obviously don't tie them up for half an hour when you first walk up to them.
Yeah.
But, come back to them and ask them what they're reading and what their favorite book is. And a lot of what makes this fun for authors is that the authors get to engage with other authors. And they learn from each other and share their experiences.
Dan, is this your first or have you done this before?
Just my second for this one.
Your second? Okay.
Yeah.
What do you enjoy about it?
Well,
if you do enjoy it, I guess I'm presuming.
Oh, it's, please.
I think that wealth of time, as Becky said, is a great gift. And for writers, it's a social 4 hours. Get to meet some old friends and get acquainted with people you've only known at book length. Mm-hmm. Get to meet and get feedback from readers and maybe even sell some books. I've found it just a big smorgasbord as well. break free from the table and just go around and browse.
I think part of the appeal also, having done it, is that that unlike doing, say, signings at bookstores, or particularly bookstores when they used to be in malls, would be everyone who's there is interested in books. You are not going to be asked where the cooking section is or where the restrooms are. the nightmares that every author who's ever done a book tour has to talk about. We are talking about the Indiana Historical Society's Holiday Author Fair this Saturday on No Limits. My guests are Becky Bollinger from the Historical Society and authors Dan Carpenter and Shane Phipps. I am John Krall. You are listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about the Indiana Historical Society's Holiday Author Fair here on No Limits. My guests are Becky Bollinger, who is from the Historical Society, and authors Dan Carpenter and Shane Phipps. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. I want to talk. I noticed that, one of the things I think about the author's life, and I'm going to talk to Shane and Dan. I remember when my book came out some years ago, I was sort of looking at the economics of it for people who want to write, and came across a very depressing statistic from the Authors Guild that said, at least at that time, there were 600,000 published authors in the United States and Canada, and only 3,000 of them didn't have day jobs. So it's really hard to make a living doing this work. Both of you obviously do have to do other things. Talk to me a little bit about the kind of commitment it takes to want to write when you know you've got to do other work just to pay the bills, and why you do it. Shane?
In my case, I did it in conjunction with my work. I did it with the intention of actually using it for my work and hoping that other teachers would be able to do the same. So that's a little bit unique. The problem is finding the time to actually get it done.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I'm assuming the school wasn't carving out 2 or 3 hours a day for you to sit and write.
Right. So my writing process is probably similar to many other authors in that I write most of it in my head as I'm sitting around watching television, and that kind of thing. And then once I sit down, it comes out fairly fast, but it takes a long time to get that outline in my head. So once I was ready to put it down on paper, it didn't take as long as it might seem. But I wrote this book for 10 or 15 years teaching first, as the stories came and the outline kind of came to me.
Dan?
I remember interviewing Jimmy Breslin one time about that. Mm-hmm. And I said, how in the world can you go out every day on deadline and actually, leave the office, pound the streets, interview people, and write a newspaper story, and then go home and work on a novel? And he said, you can't do it. It hurts.
Yeah.
And I've always been in awe of people who could make virtually a full-time job of that avocation. I think in his case, the books were selling.
Yeah,
in most cases, it is a labor of love. I've never been terribly efficient. I haven't, I've written a lot of short stories and poems, but haven't sat down and put together that, that 300-page novel or that book on some aspect of Indiana history, which I still sort of see doing. Now that I'm a part-time worker, mm-hmm. But it does take that kind of production not just discipline, but almost a monkish mindset, I think, on the part of people who know that that they're not going to be able to quit that day job.
Becky. Yeah.
I just wanted to follow up with Shane's book, The Carter Journals. We have been really fortunate to work with him on this project. This is actually the fourth book of historic fiction that the Indiana Historical Society has published. We are one of the few historical societies that publishes young adult. And it's been wonderful because with No Child Left Behind pretty much leaving history out of the conversation, we're able to use these books to get social studies in the back door, and the teachers love it. We do free curriculum that's available for all of our young adult biographies and our children's books. So the teachers that we work with are fabulous, and we really appreciate them taking the time to work with us on to provide material that's not available in the young adult market.
How much, you know, in some of that, was it also kind of an attempt to meet the audience where it is? Because I don't think I've seen as quite as powerful a phenomenon as the explosion of young adult fiction here in the past couple of decades, where, you know, you've got this huge untapped audience with. Got an example of it right here in Indianapolis with John Green becoming, you know, an international celebrity, which is relatively rare for writers.
Well, and as I was talking to Dan about this actually a couple days ago, a quality writer is a quality writer. And with children and young adults especially, often their reading level is adult level. Now, do you want them reading all of the adult books that are out there on the New York Times bestseller list? Probably not. But if you can find a quality historic fiction or young adult book, it is something that can be shared. We have a school system, Franklin, I think they're in Goshen, actually, that just ordered 300 copies of one of our young adult books, and they have a whole program set up where the parents will read it and discuss it, the youth will read it and discuss it, and then they will bring them all together in one forum. And it's such a great idea to share those books with the young adult and the adult. Because, as I mean, Shane's book is great. And so I encourage adults to read it because you're going to learn a lot.
As you pointed out, you had a wonderful phrase where you said just a couple minutes ago, talked about bringing history in through the back door because of changes in school curricula and all of that and the requirements. You are obviously a historical society, so that's an important thing. How large a challenge is that for you, and how much of the Historical Society's efforts?
Well, we're fortunate that we are large enough to fill needs, but we're small enough that we can look at projects like this holistically. I do about 20 conferences a year, so I work with homeschoolers, public school teachers, non-public educators, librarians, small bookstores. And they will come to us at these conferences and with our education program and say, I need something on this particular topic because there isn't any material out there. I want to teach it in the classroom, but it's not being provided through the standard educational processes. They have discovered that with the books that we publish and the other high-quality young adult fiction, there's often reading grants available, but it seems like it's always for literature. So if they can take Shane's book and they can buy it with their No Child Left Behind literacy grants, and then the curriculum that we provide that is written by teachers includes literacy exercises as well as social studies exercises that meet the Board of Education curriculum guidelines, it's really it's a perfect opportunity to bring all those pieces together. And for the homeschool market, where they are looking for, again, that material that's already available for them.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about the Indiana Historical Society's Holiday Author Fair here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. Shane, that sounds like actually a rather complicated set of hurdles that you have to run here to reach your intended audience. Did you write it with that in mind, or did you know, how did that process start? You said it was informed by your teaching and had a 10 to 15 year gestation period. Did you write about it, though, ultimately with the idea, okay, I'm gonna find an audience of other eighth graders, or?
Yeah, literacy is a huge push right now in our school, and I know most schools. It's just it's where our students' test scores lag the most. So back to what Becky was saying, if you can find ways to do cross-curricular activities between a language arts class and a U.S. history class, it's the best of both worlds. You've got a language arts expert to attack the literature aspect, mm-hmm. and you have a content expert in history to flesh all that out. So with that in mind, I always wanted to use books, a novel, for my class to read, but the problem was almost all of those young adult novels focus on one event mm-hmm. in history, which is great. You get to go into great detail, but it's also difficult to take that much time without falling behind in the standards. So that was the core of the idea for my book, is that it bounces along from standard to standard timeline. There's seven short stories woven together in this book so that a history teacher, for instance, can use it seven different times throughout the year. And they come back to the story, and this is what Cody did last time. Let's see where he's going to go this time. And it matches up with the curriculum, where you are throughout the year.
What do you hope that your audience will carry away from reading the book?
Two things. One, the family connection. Yeah. That we're all part of history. Our families lived it. So that's what Cody comes to grips with through firsthand, through his ancestors. And also just that overall picture that we're all connected through the historical fabric of this tapestry that we've lived in. It didn't happen to other people. It happened to us. There's a quote that I love by Norman Podlitz, I believe his name is, but it says, "When I found out history wasn't something that happened to other people, but it happened to us, it set my mind on fire." And when you can get kids to find that connection, that it's not just stories of people that lived a long time ago, these were our people, that's what the book is about.
Dan, since most people do know you, as you say, as a newspaper columnist, is there a reluctance on their part to accept or embrace your poetry? I mean, do they bring it, because at one time, particularly when the Star was at the peak of its circulation, you could be reaching, three quarters of a million people with a column, and poetry does not do that generally. That means a couple of things. One, obviously, it's a smaller audience you're working with, but they bring with them certain preconceptions about who you are, because they might have read your newspaper columns through the years.
I suppose so, and some poetry in this book indeed gets into social and political issues. You talk about reluctance to embrace my poetry. There may be just a universal reluctance
to embrace poetry.
I think myself, probably most poets kind of write from a sense of resignation about the size of the audience. And it's defeatism, I think. You should write to communicate. You shouldn't feel that you're in some esoteric elite community where poets write to each other. Mm-hmm. Certainly I'm not at the Ezra Pound level where I could claim that anyway. So I don't know what the expectations might be from people who are familiar with that political writing for this departure. But I find, just for the most part, that it's a different animal, and it's going to be people who are already into that sort of thing.
Do you find it liberating? As I say, you sort of, as a newspaper columnist, it's almost like you're fitting yourself into a harness and saying, "Okay, I'm going to plow this field." I've got this row today, that row tomorrow, and on down. Do you feel a lessening of restraint when you embrace a different form?
Yeah, especially when you have no pretense of doing it for a living. No boss. You're not shackled to that oar. And it's also, I find, so often with that journalism, with especially the polemical stuff, that the writing is reactive.
Yeah.
You're responding to something that someone else did or said, and this can flow from its own well, and that's definitely liberating.
How many poets, Becky, do you have included in historically in the author's chair?
I think this year we have three. We actually have a lot of fiction and poets this year. We have 17, which is probably our largest number of fiction and poetry we have had for a while. But I feel it's important to have poetry. Mm-hmm. It may not be the largest selling genre for us. Pretty much sports is always really, really a popular genre for us.
It is Indiana.
Yes, it is. Sports and history. But again, part of that balance when you're looking at all of those authors is to make sure that all of your bases are covered. If you've got someone who loves poetry, then we've got you covered. If you've got children that like picture books or Jewish history or Christian history, I mean, we've got all of that covered, because we really do, after all this time, work really hard to keep a balance of authors and topics.
Who draws the biggest lines there, or are most backed up?
Sports and fiction, I would say. Last year we had Slick Leonard, and he is he's just, I mean, an incredible draw.
Yeah.
Right. Phil Gulley is always a really great draw. But you know what? It's great. I mean, last year we sold out of a wonderful little book called The 12 Days of Christmas in Indiana, and it was one of the top books, and it was just this fabulous little picture book. I'm really expecting, there's a new book by Indiana University Press called Letters to Santa Claus that I'm so excited about, it because there's a group of elves, these ladies that read all the letters that are sent to Santa Claus in Indiana, to Santa, and they have put them together in a collection, and it's divided up by generation. So letters from the 20s, letters from the 30s, 40s, 50s, and they're just, it's a $20 retail, and it's just a book that can... Every family, every age can enjoy it.
Who's the author that, at least, how long have you been doing this, Becky? Have you been here from the beginning?
I've been with the Society now for 13 years, and this is our 13th. So, yeah, pretty much from the beginning. Uh-huh.
Who was the author that you were most excited to have there, and why?
Who wrote Hoosiers?
Puzo.
I'm sorry?
Puzo.
Angela Puzo?
Yes, but the movie. Yeah, it was Angelo. Angelo was there. Mm-hmm. And we had probably 300 people that came to get him to sign the DVD. And so he was a huge draw. Honestly, James Alexander Thom consistently brings in, I mean, if you look at the whole span of the author fair, he's always been the top draw.
And who does he pull out? Necessarily, what kind of crowd?
He pulls out all generations, because "Follow the River" is such a classic. I believe it was a New York Times best-selling book, but it is constantly
banned in Noblesville.
Right, it is constantly being rediscovered, and that's what I really love. Is a grandmother will share it with their teenage grandchild, and they just. He has a lot of fangirls, a lot of fanboys.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about the Indiana Historical Society's Holiday Author Fair here on No Limits. If you would like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You also can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, and you can tumble upon us on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are, from the Indiana Historical Society, Becky Bollinger. She's the manager of retail and wholesale operations at the Historical Society, and authors Dan Carpenter and Shane Phipps, who will be at the Holiday Author Fair on Saturday. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking about the Indiana Historical Society's Holiday Author Fair, which is this Saturday. My guests are Becky Bollinger. She is the manager of retail and wholesale operations at the Historical Society, and authors Dan Carpenter and Shane Phipps. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. Or you can do what a listener named Natalie has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Natalie, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you very much.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
I was wondering if Norbert Kropp is going to be there selling any of his books of poetry. In particular, Catholic Boy Blues.
He will definitely be there this year. He is one that probably has been at just about every one of our author fairs, and we're excited about him joining us again this year.
Great. And who are the other poets that will be there?
Dan Carpenter.
Dan Carpenter will be there. I have like a huge list here. Hang on just one second.
And obviously, Natalie, you are a Norbert Kropp fan, right?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Yeah, Joyce Brinkman will be there.
Okay.
She's great. And some of the authors, Helen Frost is a...
Who's been a guest on this show
right.
before,
I mean, she,
too.
I think of her as a poet. She does beautiful children's books, but a lot of her books are done in verse. And she is a best-selling author.
Okay, great.
Right.
I look forward to checking it out. Thank
All
you
right.
so much.
Thanks very much for the call and the question.
Thank
Natalie.
You. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So I'd like to give the audience a little bit of the taste of the work here. And I'm going to ask Shane and Dan to read a little bit from their work. I'm going to start with Shane. Could you first set up the section of the book you're going to read from and then read?
Yeah, rather than get into any particular story that's in the book, I thought it might be appropriate just to read the last few paragraphs because it kind of sums up the point of it. Cody had experienced reading the novels and experienced the history through his ancestors, and he's kind of debriefing with his grandfather.
And Cody is your protagonist,
right.
We should establish.
That's
yeah.
right, and his grandfather is the one who gave him the journals to read, and by now he's figured out that his grandfather had experienced the same thing. His father had experienced these things too. So he's going through it, and he's kind of concerned that when it comes time to write his own journals, they won't be exciting enough because he's gone through all this. So he's sitting down talking about that with his grandfather, and he says, "I can understand that," Cody responded, "but what about the journals that aren't that exciting? What if my journal turns out to be boring?" "That's the thing about history, Cody," Grandpa answered. "Everybody always thinks it's something that happened to other people a long time ago. The fact is, history's happening right now. We're all a part of it. Sometimes experiences happen that just at the right time and place to make an interesting story that goes into the history books, but most of the time our experiences are more ordinary. It doesn't make our lives boring or unimportant. That's just the way it is. I figure if history's happening to us, we might as well go ahead and write it down, just in case it gets exciting. If you watch what's going on close enough and write it all down, somebody down the line will want to read about it. That's just the way it goes. You don't think old Ethan Carter thought that making maple syrup with Daniel and Rebecca Boone was exciting, or that people would one day want to read about that, do you?" Then Cody understood it. It was like his history teacher said, sometimes we do get a better view of history the further we get away from it. Sometimes when you're living through something, you just don't see it as history. It's just life. But life is history, and history is life. And that, Cody thought, might be a good first entry in his own journal.
Enjoyed that. Thank you very much, Shane. Dan, what would you like to read for us?
I'll pick out a poem from my book. It's called Waking. An old house cries all night through the rusted sclerotic pipes that washed babies long since gone off to the south side or Nebraska to practice law or make babies. The place turns 90, creaking as arthritis and the unsleeping ground make their claim on joists and windows, spook the grandkids staying over with gossip passed among the ghosts. Below beats the same boiler that bounced aside the first deadly winter, roared its great breath over snug generations that it could not save, and sighs now, awaiting at last the cold and the dark.
Well, I think you made the transition from newspaper columnist to poet pretty effectively, Dan.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, that's lovely. Could you put a context to the poem? I mean, it sounds like it's got some personal associations, obviously, and poetry is, in many ways, I think, the most intimate of the literary art forms.
I guess there's a submerged sense of place there. House I grew up in might fit that description, and some others that I have at least spent nights in as a child, and always had that sense of the house as the house as a person or something with a personality and a metaphor for mortality. Not very uplifting poem, I guess.
Well, life often is not all that uplifting, as the news from California demonstrates today. If you are just joining us, we are talking about the Indiana Historical Society's Holiday Author Fair. You can join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. Yes, Becky.
I was going to say, the Basile History Market at the Indiana History Society has a huge selection of Indiana poets and fiction. Unfortunately, I think we're the largest selection of new books in downtown Indianapolis. But it's a great place to come and look for poets from past years, great fiction, history. We have free parking. So if you are looking for wonderful Indiana poets that maybe you have not read before, we do have a large selection of poetry and fiction and history. Lots of L.S. Ayers product right now. So it's a great place to come and find some other authors maybe that aren't going to be there that particular day.
How do you define success for the fair? Because it's how you said, obviously, at the top of the show that it really wasn't about making money, but that you can't afford to lose money.
Right.
So, you know, that in our culture is often the way we determine whether something is successful or not. But it sounds like there's, a different imperative here.
Well, part of our mission, we were established in 1830, and part of our mission is to disseminate history and to educate people about Indiana history and Midwestern history. So we go out of our way to not just have New York Times best-selling authors. We mm-hmm. want new authors to have their voice introduced in a market and to an audience that doesn't know anything about them. So for us, success is for the authors to come away from it, for us to have lots of book sales, because we are totally funded by membership and endowment. We do not get any state funding at all. So we need to have a successful event, obviously. But we really want people to discover Indiana at its very roots, whether it is poetry, whether it is fiction, history, to come and share the experience. And obviously, literature and writing is a huge part of Indiana history. And as we encourage each new generation of writers, they will then encourage their children to go on and explore what Indiana is about.
Shane, we're about to obviously enter into the state's bicentennial year. What part, as a history teacher, what part of Indiana history is the most obscure but shouldn't be? What part should we know about that we don't?
Based on what's in our textbooks, which are supposed to be geared to Indiana,
yeah,
there's very little So most of it. For instance, Tecumseh, who I think is as great an American as we've ever produced, gets about two paragraphs in our textbook. The Battle of Corydon, which is in my book, most Hoosiers aren't familiar with the fact that it's one of the only pitched battles to happen in a free state in the Civil War. That's something that's not even mentioned in our textbook. So Indiana history gets severely shortchanged in U.S. history textbooks. So I think it's incumbent upon Indiana U.S. history teachers to bring it out as much as we can. I really bring a lot out in Tecumseh. I just think he's a fascinating story, and kids really enjoy that story. So,
Dan, you made an allusion to the having some plans for exploring similarly obscure or forgotten parts of Indiana history earlier in the program.
Well, if I can earn some brownie points, Ray Boomhauer of the Historical Society has a new book about John Bartlow Martin.
He actually was a guest on this show. We did a show about the book. Yeah,
and
fascinating book.
John Bartlow Martin is a classic example of, especially in our profession as journalists. But he was an historian as well.
Yeah,
and he ought to have the stature of an Ernie Pyle.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow, never gained that. And his book, Indiana, an Interpretation, which I think came out in the 50s.
40s, I think, late 40s.
Oh, yeah, maybe late 40s. It's in itself is a fascinating compendium of Indiana history events and people that maybe were not well known or just they were poorly known, if you know mm-hmm. what I mean. His chapter on Eugene Debs is priceless, and I think if I were going to delve into that, I think the labor movement and the progressive strain in Indiana history is one of the great undertold stories that awaits you.
Yeah, the fact that I think the Socialist Party had its annual nominating conventions here in the state from 1900 to 1920 all the way through. Now, part of that is because Debs was from here. If you're just joining us, we are talking about Indiana history and the Indiana Historical Society's Holiday Author Fair. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Kathy did and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Kathy, welcome to the program.
Hi, John. Thank you for taking my call.
Certainly.
I really, really have enjoyed the talk with the talk with Dan Carpenter, and particularly the talk about the Sultana. What a great story that is. And I have personal friends who are authors here in town who are accomplished authors and writers, and it would be nice to see if they could be involved in this kind of book fair. How would that be accomplished?
I will ask the question, and Becky will try to give you an answer. Thanks very much for the call, Kathy.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So how would it be accomplished, Becky?
Well, all they have to do is I'm going to give you my email over the air.
you sure you want to do that?
Well, yeah. Right. B. Bollinger, B-B-O-L-I-N-G-E-R, at indianahistory.org. And what I ask is for people that are interested to send me an email with their contact information, and we will add them to the mailing list. And then next May, they will get a letter that explains exactly how the author fair works and the application. And we generally take applications from June until the end of August. And then the committee meets at the beginning of September. And we let people know within 2 weeks whether or not they've been accepted or not. And it's heartbreaking when you have to send letters to people that they were not accepted, because a lot of these books are absolutely brilliant. But again, we only have a limited amount of space, and we really do need to have a balance. But we encourage new authors and established authors to apply. We do ask that their primary book be published in the last 18 months, and just because we need to keep some kind of a limit in current books. But But yeah, we encourage people to send me an email, and we'll put you on the list for next year.
How many, you said you've got 77 all told, counting mm-hmm. co-authors and all of that. How many applications are there? Application might not be the right word. Expressions of interest or inquiries.
Well, as I said, we have a mailing list right now of about 800 people.
So less than 1 in 10.
Yeah, and we get applications from about between 200 and 300 authors because, again, that criteria where the book needs to be returnable and it needs to be published within the next 18 months or so. Self-publishing is absolutely fabulous, and we've got some great, incredible books from authors that are basically self-published authors. But there is a level of quality that has to go into those books, and they need to be well-edited and readable and things. And it always breaks our heart when you have a great book that's full of typos mm-hmm. Because they did not want to pay to have the book edited. But again, people are welcome to send me information, and we'll certainly put them on the list.
What do you hope to get out of the experience? Shane, I'm going to start with you, of being there. What are you? You said you were nervous at the top of the hour, and you're going to go all fanboy on James Alexander Tom. But what?
The main thing, I found out being an author for the mm-hmm. first time, and I've heard other authors say it, it's a lonely thing when you put a book out there and you just wait to find out how it's received. So just greeting people who have read it and just getting feedback, that's going to be probably the most valuable thing to me, just to hear from people who have read it.
Dan, what are you hoping?
I hope to sell some books and to...
Becky hopes that too.
Yeah, and we all share this hope. and to kind of... remind people that I'm still around because I don't have that platform of the daily newspaper and my mugshot there. And, the other publications, mm-hmm. Such as State House File, mm-hmm. Sky Blue Window, mm-hmm. Keep me busy, but I... could use more audience. I just want to make sure I have some sort of a profile out there. Whether they want to see me gone or not, I'll remind them I'm not.
Okay. And Becky, we're getting close on time here. Real quickly, again, if people want to attend, how do they go about doing that?
The author fair is this Saturday, December the 5th. The authors will be there signing from 12 until 4. But the building is open from 10 to 5, so you can come down and explore the trees and the amazing exhibits that we have. There is no admission, so it is absolutely free. The children's programs will be going on all afternoon. The address is 450 West Ohio Street, right downtown on the canal on the corner of Ohio and West Street.
And it sounds like it's going to be a beautiful day on Saturday. It'll be
50 degrees and sunny.
Great to go down to the canal and hang out with people who write books. I'd like to thank all of my guests and thank our audience. I am John Krall. You have been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive media coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. Joe Hatcher. Abby Terzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.